What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hello and welcome to Myth Monsters. I'm Erin, a self-confessed mythology addict and occasionally scholar. Myth Monsters focuses on the monsters of global folklore and mythology, with sometimes a cryptid thrown in once or twice. We go from looking at jackalopes to gorgons to wendigos to Bigfoot, from dwarves to elves, and honestly, everything in between. Why should I listen to this podcast over any other mythology podcast out there? Well, we're only 15 to 20 minutes long, so we're perfect in time for your little commute. And also, we focus on a different culture and monster every single week. A real in-depth look into modern media, where they're found in films, TV, video games, and books, and also the origin, description, and if I believe they existed. So it's perfect for any short trips, or if you're into any specific monsters that you fancy. So come join the fun every Thursday, and stay spooky, babes.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Mystery. Frequency.
And thank you all for tuning in.
And welcome to another episode. It's the reign of terror during the French Revolution, and innocent people are suffering, but someone's about to do something about it. Hopefully he can outwit his enemies, or it's off with his head. Today's episode is Volume 2 of The Scarlet Pimpernel, the 1952 radio adaptation from the novel of the same name. If you enjoy this episode, please check out Volume 1 in the archives, and also, check out the book. I'm actually a big fan of the book, so I highly recommend it. If you've read the book or you're a fan of The Scarlet Pimpernel, please let me know in the comments or shoot me an email at mysteryfrequencypodcast@gmail.com. You can also reach out to me on Twitter or Instagram. I also have a website and a store. You can find the links to all those in the descriptions. Please check them out. And as always, if you enjoy this podcast, if you keep coming back to it, then please consider following, leaving a review, and a rating. All that stuff helps out the podcast tremendously and is very appreciated. And a big thank you to everyone that has already done that. And lastly, this week's poll will be about giveaways. So if you're on Spotify, please check out the polls. And if you're listening anywhere else, I'll leave the poll question in the descriptions, and please send me your answer through email. And with all that, please enjoy the show. And for real, check out the book.
They seek him here, they seek him there. Those Frenchies seek him everywhere. Is he in heaven? Is he in hell? That damned elusive Pimpernel.
Presenting Marius Goring, star of the motion picture Red Shoes, as Baroness Orczy's immortal character, the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Couldn't put my finger on it. The League of the Scarlet Pimpernel suddenly ran into a streak of bad fortune. Our rescues went amiss each time we ventured into France, and even our escapes back to England were coming close to failure. The last had been particularly bad, and although Tony Dewhurst and I, along with other members of the League, attended parties as usual in London, we were not in a party mood. What a bore. I know, Tony. But if we weren't here, people might wonder.
Well, nobody's having a good time, except Coolstead.
Well, where is he? Haven't seen him about.
He's in the game room with Lord Driscoll and a few others.
Gambling?
Yes, hazard. The stakes, the last time I peeked in, were rather high and going up.
Comstead winning?
Of course not. Has he ever? He's out more than 2,000 guineas.
Whew. I had the impression that he was rather short of funds lately.
He isn't now. And as usual, he's laughing about his losses.
He's not the only happy member of our league, though, Tony. Look.
Oh, you mean Kent. Yes, he seems to be quite taken with the charms of Millicent Faraday.
I think they have an understanding. Mm-hmm. We can look forward to an engagement announcement any day.
Look, they know we're talking about them. What a smile. Oh, she's like sunshine.
Coming over to join us.
You must take me in for some punch, Sir Percy.
Well, with Kent holding your arm as he is, I'm afraid we'll have to drag him along too. What?
Oh, no. He's been monopolizing me all the evening.
I didn't know you objected, my dear.
I don't, really. But I want to make you jealous. It's part of being feminine. My mother told me.
Oh, I say. I see.
Now, come on, Kent. You and I can go and see how Coolstead is faring at hazard.
By all means. I'm sure you'll excuse us, Millicent. Blakeman?
Yes, we will.
What's your behavior, you two?
Oh, isn't he wonderful?
Tony Dewhurst?
No, I mean Robert Kenton, you know it.
Oh.
Now, you mustn't tease me, Percy, or I'll have my punch with old Lord Driscoll. Come.
She was, as Tony had said, like a sunburst. But Kent wasn't. Three times during the evening, I could feel his hot glare boring into my back. He wasn't happy anymore. Neither was Comstead. His face was tense when we passed the hazard table. His losses close to 10,000.
What's the matter with our young men? None of them seem to know how to laugh anymore.
Well, it might be the weather, you know. Seem to have a touch of lumbago myself.
You've always got a touch of something. And no wonder. You're always so lazy.
Don't lick me. I've been looking for you. Excuse me, Millicent, but the gentlemen in the library have a trick that Blakeney simply must see. Do you mind?
No, not at all. He was just beginning to bore me. And Robert's been frowning, so I'd better go to him. You needn't take me. Goodbye.
Goodbye. What is it, Tony?
Saunders just rode in from Dover.
Word from France, yes.
Troublers, police have arrested the Duc de Farigny and his family.
Where? When?
Yesterday at Nantes. They'll be brought before the tribunal there tomorrow and tried. Of course, they'll be convicted of every conceivable crime without evidence.
Naturally. Tomorrow, eh? Well, that means they'll be transported to Paris and the guillotine the day after. Round up our men, quietly, unobtrusively. If we leave immediately, we should manage to get to the village of Terrier by tomorrow night.
Oh, why Terrier?
Because Terrier is on the road from Nantes to Paris. A good place to ambush their guard and liberate the Duke and his family. You go that way. I'll go this.
I hope our luck is better this time than last.
Yes, I hope so, too.
In a moment, Marius Goring returns as the Scarlet Pimpernel. Goring as the Scarlet Pimpernel.
We rode hard through the night and reached the coast. Then crossed the channel and split up on the French coast with arrangements to rendezvous at a roadside hostelry near Terrier. By midnight, we were all assembled in a room above the inn. Gentlemen, as you've just heard from Saunders, the Duc de Farigny and his family were today tried and sentenced to death by the French tribunal at Nantes. Whether or not that sentence will be executed, however, depends on us. The Duke's party will be transported by carriage, guarded by approximately 30 of Chauvelin's best troops. Since there are 11 of us, we will need the element of surprise as an ally.
What time tomorrow do you think they should reach here?
About dusk, if they leave at sunrise. That's one reason for picking this spot. You seem to have a question, Counselor.
Just wondering about the point of attack.
There's a fork in the road about 3 kilometers past the town. There's also an old house now used as a guardhouse. About half a dozen soldiers stationed there. Well, we'll overpower them early tomorrow afternoon and replace them with our own men.
We have a few extra uniforms to make up for what they lack.
As a matter of routine, they will probably stop there to gossip and water the horses. I'll give you individual assignments tomorrow. There were only 3 soldiers at the guard post the next day, and we took it over in a matter of seconds. Lookouts went up each fork of the road, and I sent Saunders into the town to watch for any possibility of trouble from that quarter. The lookouts were posted on heights to enable them to signal us, except for Saunders, who would have to ride in with news. As dusk approached, we waited tensely. Then a signal came.
Blakeney, look, Kent, that hill up the left fork.
4, 5, 6, 7.
Each wave of the arm means 5 men.
Yes. They're 35 strong, 1 kilometer off. And
what?
A signal from the right fork lookout, too. 3, 4, 5.
Another 25. Coming from 2 ways.
Quickly, men. Into the brush, one of the sides of the road. Abandon the guard post. Wait for my signal before starting any attack.
Right.
Look, horse coming in from town, riding hard. It's Saunders.
Troops! Troops coming from the town.
How many soldiers?
Two detachments. About 50.
Well, gentlemen, they're coming at us from three directions. The odds are 10 to 1. We're trapped. But we still make our try.
How did this happen? How can our luck be so cursed?
It isn't our luck, Tony. Luck had nothing to do with this. We've been betrayed. Sold out.
But by whom? Nobody knew our plan. Nobody but our own men.
Yes, Tony. One of our own men. Well, we better get a cover with the others. Saunders?
Huh?
Take your horse over to that side. Put him in the gully with the others.
Right. Up, boy!
Come on, Tony.
Who, Blakeney?
I don't know. Maybe none of us will ever know. Because if he's made his bargain well, he may be the only one of us who doesn't die this evening.
In a moment, Marius Goring returns as the Scarlet Pimpernel. Now, Marius Goring as the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Our men were deployed on either side of the guard post that nestled in the fork of the road, using the natural drainage ditches for cover. Not one voice was raised to suggest retreat or abandonment of our rescue attempt. And yet, somewhere among us was a traitor.
Stay under cover, men, and don't reveal yourselves or fire unless you are fired upon directly. Ignore any fire that isn't right in your direction. Now, I can't repeat this. Just watch for a chance to seize the carriage. All understood?
Right. Right.
Saunders.
Yeah?
Come with Tony and me. Hurry.
Where to?
The horses.
What's our move?
Look, twilight's coming. Less than a dozen of us. We don't stand a chance against more than 100. So maybe we can avoid fighting them.
Well, how?
By getting them to fight each other. They'll be coming to that guard post from 3 different directions. Tony, you cut back through here, under cover of the woods, and circle in behind the group approaching from the left fork. Saunders, you do the same with the group approaching from the right fork. I'll get to the rear of the group coming from the town. Clear?
Yes.
Now, as you approach the crossroads, spur your mounts. Ride to the front of your group, quickly, so that each one of us comes to the crossroad at the head of his group. The men you pass will only see you from the back as you ride by, and you won't be suspect, even if they are all known to each other.
You mean you and Saunders and I should each be at the head of a force when we converge on the guard post?
Exactly. And as we do, we charge towards each other and open fire. Order the groups forward.
But why should they fire on each other?
Because they're expecting a fight from us, Saunders. Each unit will think the other 2 units are made up of our men and that they have been trapped.
What a magnificent gamble.
Then mount up. It was a gamble, all right. A mad, desperate gamble. I rode hard until I could see the mounted troops from the town through the foliage. A fleeting glimpse. Their massed hoofbeats covered the sound of my mount, and I cut out of the brushwood and into the road behind them. If the others had managed as well, we'd be just in the nick of time. I spurred my mount, shot along the side of the ragged column, and just as the crossroad came into sight, I reached the head of the group, saw Tony and Saunders come riding to the fore of their assigned units. I cocked my gun.
There they are, comrades! Charge! Charge!
Each of our opening shots hit. Riders tumbled, and the crossroad became a melee of frightened horses and men. They fired wildly into their own ranks at random, confused, unable to tell friend from foe. Then they started to break and retreat. I dropped from my horse, dived for the ditch. Tony and Saunders broke through and scrambled after me.
All right, men! Open fire from this side!
Look at the beggars' tag-tail! What a sight!
They'll slaughter each other in this
sight. We won't be here to see it. Either of you sight the carriage.
No.
Then let's go and look for it. Stay low, undercover, until we're clear of this.
Right.
Keep firing, men, till they disperse. Keep firing!
Each man nodded grimly as we passed the word, keeping intent eyes on the road. We got clear and started our search. Then night came. There was no sight or sign of the carriage we had come to claim. It was almost midnight when we made our way back to an agreed assembly point. Two men were missing.
Kampstead and Kent.
The rendezvous this time was a stone quarry near an old and unused wagon road. It had been fitted out by us for use in emergencies, with provisions and torches and firewood. And as we approached, we could smell the smoke of a wood fire.
Somebody's there, all right.
Binkley!
Yes?
Right over toward me, will you?
Up, boy. Well, what?
Moon hits the side of the quarry there. Something hidden in those small trees.
Yes. Yes, I see what you mean. Why, it looks like...
Blakely, it's a carriage, and there's only one carriage that could logically be here.
Coombsted or Kent went after the carriage and the Duke and his family. Perhaps both of them turned the trick together.
We'll soon know. Come on, up, boy.
We rode forward to the quarry, and the way was clear. We dismounted and went into a most welcome sight. Stretched out on pallets and sleeping the sleep of exhausted people were the Duke de Farigny and his wife and two children. And stretched out by the fire with a lazy smile was Arthur Kalmsted.
Well, wherever you chaps been, I'd about given you up.
Oh, Kalmsted, I could kiss you.
So could I.
All offers duly noted and rejected. That was quite a lot of shooting earlier this evening. All of you all right?
All except one, Kalmsted.
Who? All here but Kent?
That's right. Did you see him?
No.
Somebody's coming. All right, Kent. Put the gun down.
Oh, it's you.
Well, what's everybody so quiet about? Oh, the Duke and the family. Thank heaven you've got them.
It's no use, Kent.
What? What's no use?
When are your friends coming?
What friends? Am I being accused of something?
We were betrayed by one of our own today, Kent. Why did you run? Where did you go?
I'll tell you where. To look for those people sleeping on the floor. Because no carriage passed me, and the spur I was on was the best carriage road from Nantes. But when I went back, I ran into a band of 8 soldiers. I lost them less than 2 hours ago. Then I came back here on a lame horse.
Stop lying, Kent. You betrayed us because you're jealous of Blakeney, because of Millicent.
Jealous of Blakeney? Are you mad? He's a lifelong friend. I get angry with her whenever she leaves me to spend time with anybody.
Personally, I don't want to listen to this. We all know what happened.
Just a minute, Kalmsted. Where are you going?
Away from the smell of his story. To get some air.
Why, you...
No, Kent. Grab him. But
let me go. I never betrayed you.
That's the truth, gentlemen. He never did. Did he, Kalmsted?
What do you mean?
He ran into an advance guard of 8 men going before that carriage. Hmm? Yet you found it guarded by only half as many. If the Republic sent 100 troops to ambush us, they certainly kept the carriage well protected.
Are you mad, Blakeney? You know those people, don't you? They visited England, been at court.
Yes, and when you ran today, you did so because you thought we'd be finished at the crossroads. When we weren't, you were given the carriage and these people to bring here, to bait one last trap. Because it wasn't certain we'd all come here, unless the word could be passed that they had been rescued and were safe.
But I don't, Blakeney, don't be a fool. There's your traitor. I'm going out.
No, you're not. That urge to go out as soon as Kent came in confirmed what I thought. We are all here now, every one of us. And so you're going out to give a signal, aren't you?
Look!
No. I'd rather listen. A few months ago, you sold the last of your land. You were without funds. But ever since then, after every journey to France, you've gambled and lost thousands of pounds. Where did you get that money, Kamstead? How much gold do you have on you now?
Let me out of here!
You can't go out like that!
I'm sorry, Blakeney. He almost had his gun turned on you. I had to do it.
It's all right, Kent. Wherever his friends are, they're not too close. Probably back in the hills waiting for a signal. They won't get it now. We'll move out right away.
In a moment, Marius Goring returns as the Scarlet Pimpernel. Marius Goring as the Scarlet Pimpernel.
So, Coolstead has gone to the colonies to live.
Yes, so they say. A dreadful bore, you know. All sorts of savages.
Oh, you're just so lazy. Do you know something, Percy? I believe that Robert is jealous of you. Because I like you.
Oh, don't be a silly goose. I thought so once, too.
You did?
Yes, I did. Gave me quite a turn for a moment, too. Actually, I thought I'd die from it.
Oh, Percy, you're such a clown.
Adventures of the Scarlet Pimpernel, starring Marius Goring, with music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers. Thank you.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
They seek him here, they seek him there. Those Frenchies seek him everywhere. Is he in heaven? Is he in hell? That damned elusive Pimpernel.
The Adventures of the Scarlet Pimpernel, starring Marius Goring as Sir Percy Blakeney.
We first saw the wreckage of the fishing boat off Shoreham as the morning mists cleared away. Aboard the Daydream, Tony Dewhurst and I, along with other members of the League of the Scarlet Pimpernel, had been waiting to sail with a change of the tide.
It's out there to starboard, Blakeney. You better use the glass.
Thank you.
See it?
Yes. Man clinging to a bit of wreckage. That's strange.
What?
Seems to be bobbing about in one spot. Riding the swells, but not moving with them.
Well, what do you make of that?
Some shallows there. Might be that the piece of mast he's hanging on to is still connected to the body of his ship by ropes.
Do you see any other survivors?
No. And I don't think we'll be seeing that one for long unless we get to him. Boop! Harding! Hoist anchor, make sail! Wreckage to starboard!
You want me to take the helm?
No. Kent's back there. He heard. He'll take us in close.
Not too close with this sea.
No need for it. You and I can pick him up in the floorboat.
I wonder who that poor devil is.
I'm certain he'll be happy to tell us if we get to him in time. We made it in time. Just in time. Our approach was difficult. And even as the small boat bore down on him, the man clinging to the wreckage gave his last conscious gasp and relaxed his hold on the mast. But at the same moment, Tony Dewhurst, with a gigantic stretch, leaned over the gunwale and caught him by the hair.
Got him, Blakeney!
Can you hold him?
His hair's slippery. Can you lend a hand?
If I let go of this killer, we'll founder. Brace yourself.
What are you going to do?
Take one, broadside. It's our only chance. It'll wash him in on us. It'll swamp us all together. Ready?
Go ahead.
Here it comes. Better be ready to bail as soon as we've got him.
Got him!
Look out! One eye steady.
Good, she's coming about.
One more and she won't, though. Get busy with that bucket.
Right.
How is he?
In bad shape, I'm afraid. You'll never want to see the sea again, I'll wager. It's like a French fisherman.
French, all right, Tony. But not a fisherman.
How can you tell?
His face is weathered from the sea, all right. But look at his hands. They've never handled nets. My guess is he's a French naval officer.
But that piece of mast, Blakeney, not big enough for a warship. Must have been a fishing boat.
I agree about the vessel, Tony, but not about the man.
Well, why should he be aboard such a craft, then?
That's something I hope to find out when we get him safely aboard the Daydream.
Coming around now, Blakeney.
Yes. Hold the spirits under his nose again.
All right.
That's enough. Come on, old boy. Come on.
What? What? Hold.
The hold I must...
Steady. Steady, man. You're all right.
You could do with a tot of rum, Blackney. There's some in the glass. Yeah.
Better fetch it.
Right away.
What sort of a ship is this?
A private vessel.
You are the owner?
Yes. And you?
Just a fisherman, monsieur. Jean Soulet.
That may be your name, all right. But you're not a fisherman.
You are very clever and quick in your observations, monsieur.
We found your identification papers when we removed your clothing. Lieutenant Soulet.
Very well, monsieur. Does it matter? I am grateful to you for saving my life.
It may not be saved. Yet.
What do you mean by that?
The wreckage you were clinging to is part of a fishing vessel.
So?
And you are not in French naval uniform.
I see.
To the British Admiralty, that might sound as though you were secretly observing our coastal defenses.
You think I am a spy, monsieur?
It is possible.
Has it not occurred to you that I might be a deserter from the French Navy?
Nice. Now, here's the rum. Pour one out for our French friend, Tony.
Uh-huh. Speaking of friends, French and otherwise, Kent just gave me a message. One of our warships was sighted a few moments ago. Signalman wanted to know if we'd caught any sight of a French corvette.
When?
This morning. Fan said they'd spotted one briefly and lost it in the mist. Pretty close to our shore.
Yes, very close. What do you think of that, Lieutenant Soulet?
As I said, I am a deserter. Perhaps they thought to catch me and my fishing vessel.
So that's it.
No, Tony. I'm afraid that isn't it at all. Better give the lieutenant his drink. You'll need it.
Of course.
Yeah.
Thank you. I do not know what wild thoughts your imagination leads you to, monsieur, but...
No wild thoughts, Lieutenant. That corvette they sighted was not pursuing you. It was escorting you.
Escorting me, monsieur? For what purpose?
I would say... for the purpose of seeing you safely landed on this side of the channel.
Apparently they did not succeed then.
No, because our warship scared them off.
Well, why should they escort a fishing vessel, Blackney?
That's for our friend to tell us.
I have nothing to tell.
Don't lie, Soulet. When you regained consciousness a few moments ago, you immediately started to babble about something in the hold of your ship.
That's right, Soulet. It was your first thought.
What is in the hold of that sunken vessel, Soulet?
There is gold.
Gold?
Yes, gold. More than 10 million francs in gold.
See here, you're joking.
I do not joke, monsieur.
You are bringing 10 millions in gold to England. For what reason?
To be placed on deposit in English banks under a false name.
For whom?
Obviously, monsieur, for some member of our new and glorious republic.
What do you mean, Soulet? Oh, I think his meaning is all too obvious, Tony. Some of the French officials are stealing tax money and sending it abroad to be held for their own use. Is that it, Soulet?
Oui. Does it surprise you?
No, it doesn't. How many times have you done this before?
This would have been my third trip. It was a trip my crew did not wish to complete. They mutinied, planning to seize the gold for themselves and take refuge in England. It was the mutiny that led to our shipwreck. The rest you know.
Quite a pretty story, eh, Tony? Citizen Chauvelin, the other French officials, bleed their people white with taxes, while they themselves grow fat and prosperous.
Yes. Yeah. Even send the money abroad so it'll be safe if the people ever find the courage to turn on them. You must be proud of yourself, Soulet.
I am a military man, monsieur. I am given my orders and I endeavor to obey them. It is not for me to decide what is right or wrong.
Tell the men to stand by, Tony. We have work to do.
What sort of work?
As soon as the sea is calm, we are going down after that gold.
Aye.
By midday, the sea had calmed sufficiently. The fishing vessel was in comparatively shallow water, and by diving in relays, we managed to secure ropes to the chests in the hold and raise them to the deck of the Daydream. And all the while, Soulet studied me with a speculative look. He seemed to be making a decision about something as we hauled the last chest aboard.
Oh. Neatly done, gentlemen. Is that right, Soulet? Four chests in all?
That is correct, monsieur. I would like to speak to you alone, monsieur.
All right. Back into my cabin. Secure those chests, Tony.
All right.
All right, Soulet. What do you want to say?
What do you plan to do with me, monsieur?
That's a matter for the law to decide, not me. I will send you ashore to be dealt with by the British authorities, since you were picked up in our territorial waters.
That is fair enough.
That isn't why you really came in here. That isn't what you want to ask?
No, you are right. What I wanted to ask is far more important to me than my own fate. Did you mean what you said this morning?
About what?
About the gold. About making certain that it went back to the French people.
Every sou of it.
I will ask one more question, monsieur. The truth of your answer will be important to me. Are you the Scarlet Pimpernel?
Why should that matter to you?
Because, despite being a military man, I am a Frenchman. I love my country and my people. If you are the Pimpernel, I will tell you why I ask.
All right. I am the Scarlet Pimpernel.
I was sure of it. You are going to give 10 million francs back to the French people. Would you like to give them 100 million more?
100 million?
Oh, do not be amazed, monsieur. I do not joke. Like the money you have on deck, it will be tax money taken from the poor and the hungry.
Where is it now?
At this moment in the government treasury at Paris. But sometime next week, an attempt will be made to ship it to Spain to be deposited in banks there.
I see.
I cannot give you an exact date. Once the money leaves Paris, I do not know how it will be handled or exactly where it will go.
But you do know what method will be employed to get it out of Paris.
Oui, that much I can tell you. If you and your men can seize it for redistribution...
We can try.
Very well. In the Rue de Galilée, there is a carriage house and stable owned by Edouard Merriel. It is he who will supply transportation when the money is moved.
He must supply transportation for many purposes.
Yes, yes, but in this case, it will be different. His daughter will drive one of the coaches. The daughter's name is Yvonne.
A girl? A dog?
Nevertheless, it is so. Yvonne is a fanatical supporter of the regime. The trip will be made at night. It will not be necessary for you to maintain watch during the day. I must warn you, the carriages will be heavily guarded.
Well, that's to be expected.
You will have to fight. I have but one request to make. No matter what happens, please make certain that the girl Yvonne comes to no harm.
You love her?
No, monsieur. I do not love her. Not anymore. But she happens to be my wife.
League of the Scarlet Pimpernel abandoned their English identities and assumed French disguises. Fortunately for us, the carriage shop of Edouard Myriel was a meeting place for loiterers, and over a period of days, Tony and I slowly became part of the circle that gathered there every evening.
I see our friends are already assembled, Blakeney.
Yes.
Well, at least they have no suspicion of us. We seem to be socially acceptable.
Don't be too certain. The girl Yvonne hasn't accepted us.
Well, Myriel has.
Possible that the old man doesn't know what his carriages are being used for. The girl does.
Yes, but why should she suspect it?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out.
How?
By telling her that we also know what the carriages are being used for.
Isn't that a bit foolhardy?
Not if I achieve my purpose.
You mean getting us guillotined, our boy?
No. But when those carriages eventually do go out, it won't hurt our plans if I'm driving one of them.
Yes, but what are the other things?
Better save it, Tony. Mary will see this coming.
Aye.
Ah, bonsoir, comrade. You are late tonight.
Bonsoir, citizen Myriel. Good evening, citizen comrade. Ah, but let us not despair, comrades. Mark my words. Our leaders have a plan that would startle all of you.
Oh, what plan is this?
A plan to relieve the misery and suffering of the people. Citizen Chauvelin and others of the Committee of Public Safety will soon show their generosity.
Oh, what do you mean?
I only overheard, of course, but... There is a large surplus of gold from the taxes they have collected. There is a plan to return the tax gold to the poor of each district.
Then I pray they start in my district of Bagnolet. None is poorer in all of France.
Bagnolet? But that is where they will start.
They will?
Is it not so, comrade? Is not that the decision?
Oui,
Bagnolet.
Please. I am fortunate to have a means of livelihood, but... Do not joke with these other citizens unless you know whereof you speak.
I assure you, citizen Myriel, the poor of Bagnolet will have gold in their hands before the week is out. No. If the Committee of Public Safety is going to be so generous there, well, it is only logical that they will also favor the people of the other district.
Ah, you must be dreaming, citizen. Somewhere or other you have wetted your mouth with too much wine.
No, he is drunk with rumor. He only repeats what we have heard. If you do not like my good news, citizen Myriel, perhaps your daughter will. I do not see her about.
No, she
is at the Taverne La Tourette.
Then I shall go there and find her. Would you care to walk along with me, citizen?
Oh, we are going that way in any case.
Bonsoir, camarade.
What the devil was all that about, Gregory?
An inspiration, Tony. We are going to distribute that money in Bagnolet.
Yes, but to tell them about it, with that wild story about the generosity of Chauvelin and the committee, it's going to cause talk, you know.
That's exactly what I intended it to do. And we're going to give the talk some help. You know where to locate Kent and Fuchs?
Yes, of course.
We'll go to them at once. Now, tell them to get all the materials we need for printing. You know, printing the sort of announcement posters that the new government is forever plastering over the town.
Why?
Because we're going to put up a few of our own on their behalf.
Well, what are you going to announce?
The same thing I announced to our friends back there.
Huh?
The distribution of 100 million francs in gold to the poor people of Bagnolet. The plan came to me suddenly. No longer a waiting plan, but a plan to force the other side into action. While Tony went in search of Kent and Fuchs, I found Yvonne at the Taverne La Tourette. I did not join her, but I waited until she started for home. Then I followed and caught up to her. Why do you hurry so, mademoiselle? The night is pleasant, and one so lovely as you should not walk alone.
I am not in the mood for romantic walks, citizen. If you wanted to talk to me, you might have done so in the tavern.
You were surrounded with other admirers.
Admirers capable of buying wine.
You call that wine? I do not know why you even condescend to drink it. You could command champagne.
What do you mean by that?
Your husband, Lieutenant Soulet, commands champagne.
What do you know about my husband?
A great deal. I know a great deal about many things. About carriages and fishing vessels and 10 million francs in gold.
Do you know where my husband is?
In England. This time, he did not deposit the gold and return.
The traitor. So that is why.
You are surprised that he found 10 millions in gold more attractive than you?
What is 10 million when I could have...
She made the mistake I'd expected. The error I'd hoped for. Madame Soulet was playing a big game for big stakes with her husband nothing more than a pawn. The pieces clicked together in my mind.
I mean...
I know what you mean, madame. You are using your husband to deposit stolen gold for another man. A man you eventually hope to share it with.
All right, citizen. What of it? You breathe one word and I'll have you killed.
By your friend? That would depend on what I said, would it not? I suppose I were to say that you plotted with your husband. That you were really playing your game the other way. Suppose I were to implant in your friend the thought that you are now waiting a chance to run to England and join your husband.
He wouldn't believe you.
Oh, wouldn't he, madame? Can you be so certain of that? He's a man who will rob his country and his people. A man who will freely and without question believe a woman who has betrayed her husband.
You...
Is there really honor among thieves?
What do you want?
A share in the next venture, madame. I will drive one of the wagons when you move 100 million in gold for deposit in Spain.
The drivers have all been handpicked. I have nothing to say.
Then use your influence, madame, or I will use my knowledge.
All right. I will try. The shipment will be made on Friday. Come to the tables Friday night at 11.
I will be there every night at 11 from now on, in case the time is changed. Bonsoir, Madame Soulet. I let her go. Then I followed her for one last piece of information. She did not go to the stables. Instead, she went directly to the home of Citizen Chauvelin himself. My plan had taken form perfectly by the time I reached my rendezvous with Tony and other members of the League.
Well, there's all the poster equipment, Blakely.
Good. Let's get busy.
All right.
Now, we'll want the top in very large letters. You're best at that, Fuchs, so you mark it out.
Right.
Kent and Tony and I will fill in the lettering.
What do you want it to say?
That by order of Citizen Chauvelin and the Committee of Public Safety, a tax surplus of 100 million francs in gold will be distributed to the people of the Bagnolet district at the earliest possible moment. And that similar relief will be given to other districts immediately after.
You just wanted an ass.
Come on now. Busy all. I want dozens of these finished and placed all over the city by the morning.
Yeah. We don't even know when they're going to move the girl.
I think we do, Tony. Once these posters go up, they'll be forced, through fear, to move it tomorrow night.
Yes, but it's so heavily guarded, we'll never get close to it.
That's where you're wrong. I'll be driving one of the carriages, and I'll be carrying a little surprise of my own, which I'd better start rigging now.
What sort of a surprise?
An explosive surprise. The guards will be looking for trouble from outside. It'll be quite a shock to them when one of the carriages explodes in their midst.
Oh, granted, but what do we do then?
In the confusion, I think we'll be able to do just what we please. You and the others can follow, mounted and in troop uniform, and as soon as you hear the blast, come quickly. Knock the drivers out, take their places, and we'll take the carriages and all.
And judging by the text of this sign, we head for Bagnolet.
Right, folks, to distribute 100 million francs with the compliments of Citizen Chauvelin.
You know, of course, that half the French army will be after us.
Not for long, Tony. They'll never reach us. You can gather quite a crowd whenever you start throwing away gold. We got the signs posted, and by morning the city was in an uproar. Troops tried to tear the signs down and were mobbed by angry and excited crowds. By nightfall, rolling mobs with torches were stalking the streets. Even the mounted troops, failing to maintain any semblance of order, were joining in the excited conversations. I gave Tony and the others final instructions and headed for the stables in Rue Galilée. They seemed locked and shuttered, but I pounded brazenly at the door, and finally it opened.
Oh, is it you, citizen?
Oui, madame. You seem ready to move tonight. I thought you would be. After the announcement today, Citizen Chauvelin must be mad.
Fool, do you think he made such a proclamation? Because of it, we are forced to move tonight.
You should have notified me, madame. I came here only by chance.
Then it is fortunate for both of us. There is no time for argument, and we have not been able to contact all the drivers we need.
Which wagon shall I take?
That one over there. Select a team and hitch them.
It was almost as though they were working to my own timetable. Because of the mobs in the streets, it was impossible to leave until the district grew quiet in the early morning hours. Then the carriages moved quietly towards the center of the city. It took a full hour to load the chests of gold and get started toward the outskirts of the town. I lit the fuse to the powder charge I had concealed, waited a few seconds, then leapt from the seat and fell flat at the side of the road.
You! Driver! What is wrong?
You will know in a moment!
Hold them!
Get on, men! Take those wagons!
English! The Pimpernel!
I remembered my promise to Lieutenant Soulet, so I took the carriage his wife was driving. She was stunned, and so I tossed her, none too gently, into a heap of rubbish in the middle of the road, as my men seized the last of the carriages and started off. I led them through narrow streets where our pursuers were forced to drop back and take our withering fire. The body of the carriage served as our protection. Daylight was just breaking as we thundered into the streets of Bagnolet. Wake up, citizens! Wake up! Start throwing the gold about, men!
Throw
the gold out!
By the time we reached the center of the district, a surging mob was behind us. We brought the carriages to a halt. In a matter of minutes, there was pandemonium.
Governor, citizens, there is enough for all!
Money for bread, citizens!
Bread and barrels and clothing! All with the compliments of Citizen Chauvelin!
Leave us, Chauvelin, citizens!
Oh, why not? Our work is done. Leave the good people their money and let's walk.
Oh, come in. Well, I say one thing for you, Blakely. You certainly do know how to give a party.
Certain my wife was not harmed.
Quite certain, Soulet.
Oh, I am glad. But...
What?
Oh, I don't know. Giving that money out in the name of Citizen Chauvelin. You even tell me how they cheered. You have made him a hero.
You think so? Tell him, Tony. He may be a hero in Bagnolet, but we went back to our old disguises and lingered about Paris for a few days.
Citizen Chauvelin has quite a problem.
How so?
Well, he can't possibly admit that he was stealing the money and that it was given back by the Scarlet Pimpernel, can he?
No.
So now all the other districts are getting irritable. They want to know when the good citizen is going to help them. They're getting downright nasty about it.
Oh, I see.
Have a drink, Julie. Gentlemen, to Citizen Chauvelin.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.